Okay.
Welcome to the Permaculture Pimpcast, everybody. The Pimpcast or podcast where we take a pragmatic approach to permaculture. And yes, pimp means exactly what you think it does. Permaculture is my passion. How you doing, son?
Good. Just got done packing for this workshop we're about to head off to.
Episode 10, man. I can't believe it, folks. Okay, I know we got a tip of the day, but I'm just going to say it right off. Look, I mean, we're 10 in and we're only a couple of weeks into this podcast. And the reason for that, the more you do something, the better you become at it. Now, am I a perfect, excellent podcaster? No, not yet, but we're going to get there. So, tip of the day right off the bat, y'all. Do not plant your comfrey in potting soil or compost. Why, son?
Because it's not going to fulfill any role there. If you're planting in potting soil or compost, the soil is already perfect. So the comfrey is not going to fulfill any role. It's considered a weed, so it's not going to grow well there. It needs the crappy, clay, sandy, rocky soil that you have just right outside your door.
The worse the soil, the better this stuff does. But, I get emails from time to time from people saying, hey, this stuff ain't working out for me. And then just about every single time, it's usually one of two things. And we have it in the instructions. I know early on we didn't put it in there.
We never started it in potting soil, I don't think.
No.
Not just straight up potting soil.
No, it has worked for some people in the past, but generally, you know, the worse the soil, the better this stuff is going to do. So if you're getting any comfrey from us, y'all, the roots, remember, just about 2 inches below the surface, it really doesn't take much to do. In fact, at this whale class that we're going to do this weekend, I hope to do a video where we kind of show you up close and personal exactly how to do this stuff. Speaking of the swale class, it's going to be listed in the show notes, right?
Yeah, it is. And you can still, can they still come?
Yeah. Yeah. You can even be a, you can show up on the, if you just decide one morning, Friday or whatever, decide you want to go out to this swale class. Look, just show up and you can settle up with Nicole when you get there.
The class is actually Saturday and Sunday. It's just the campers arrive on Friday.
There you go. So it's going to be a good time. I can't wait to do this. And it's not every day that somebody just gives you an open invitation to, hey, sculpt this land and make it happen. So we'll talk more about that in a minute. But before we do, there was, I literally just read this email before I even went on. Look, I make no bones about the fact that we're Christians here. You know, Jesus is my Lord and Savior, and I make no apologies for that. But 2 Kings 3:16-17, thank you, Natalie. I was floored when I read this, and it says, and he said, thus saith the Lord, make this valley full of ditches. Thus saith the Lord, you shall not see wind, neither shall ye see rain. Yet the valley shall be filled with water that ye may drink, both ye and your cattle and your beasts. And this was our pastor's text, she said, and she sends in giant bold letters, swales are biblical, LOL. And I'm like, how cool is that? Because there's so much in permaculture that does overlay in the Bible when you stop to look at it. Because when you do the kind of work we do and then you start at Genesis and then work your way through, you find all these little nuggets throughout, because there's not a day that goes by where I don't. In fact, if I do neglect to get into my Bible, then it's not going to be a good day. But when she sent that to me, it put a smile on my face. Thank you so much, Natalie.
It made me think of, instead of swales, it made me think of Key Line Design.
Could be that.
It could be that as well, but that's, you know, a good thing. Neither right. One is wrong.
But I'm like, how cool is that? So, all right. So thank you so much, Natalie, once again. Okay, some more of that farm news. Eric Sider, he's a friend of mine. He's a friend of ours, friend of the family, really. He has a YouTube channel. He hasn't done a whole lot with it lately because he's just been up to his eyeballs. But he sent me a picture, a pretty awesome picture of, it was basically his version of a chicken tractor on steroids. And if you look at it, this thing looks even better than the stuff we do, which
the
I'm
compost?
Not. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's doing great.
Is it stationary or mobile?
He's doing it exactly the same way. Mobile. And, okay. You know, and this is exactly like when I told Jack Spearco in that interview, and I'll talk about that in a minute. When I talked to him and I was like, man, when he came up with his twist on it, I was thinking, man, this is exactly what I hoped would happen years ago. And I'm sure it's exactly what Jeff Lawton hoped, is that people take these. Maybe that's why he didn't give all the instructions, like, what if this, what if that? He kind of left it up maybe to us to figure out.
Maybe he left it vague on purpose.
Right. So you got to put in something. You got to have some legwork into this. And then Eric takes it past where we found it. Or Jack comes up with an idea of using the bioreactor, his version of it, to twist this thing. And I'm like, okay, there are a few hurdles to jump over, but this is exactly what I'd hoped for when it comes to doing really anything. I'm always hoping that somebody will say, oh, hey, great idea, but what if we did this? Like Darren did with the chicken tractor.
In the first 3 seconds he saw it.
Right. He looks at it, and I'm not going to tell you, Darren, when I say Darren, y'all, I'm talking about Hacks for the homesteader. Good friend of ours, good friend of the family. Real good friend of mine, and he looks at this tractor, and then, I mean, literally in 2 seconds says, okay, if we did this, it would make it light years easier, especially for people that might be slightly infirmed. So that, there's a theme to all this, you know, building community is really what this show is all about, and it's funny how we can find so many things that kind of tie into that, where Darren looks at something, improves it, Jack thinks about it, has only seen it, I think, on our YouTube channel, and he improves it. I can't wait to see, now that we're getting more legs on all this, this is exactly what we had hoped for.
James and Ashley from Strand Farm, right. they've done it and adapted it. Same with Shelly Randolph from Two Old Crows.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're doing it, and they've adapted it as well. There's a stationary.
And the beauty about all this is that we are finding out, especially... I remember I went into this whole YouTube thing kicking and scratching. When I got out of talk radio and every other thing, I was content. When I say content, I mean content to go into obscurity until he talked me into this.
It took about a year of talking about it before we actually started filming our first YouTube videos.
Right. And we had been doing it for years and years. And, you know, looking back at it with the benefit of hindsight, I'm really wishing that we had recorded so much more, but we didn't. And maybe it was all for a purpose, because right now it seems like at the most consequential and crucial time that things are going on right now, so many people are looking at what we're doing, and it could be something as simple like I was taking, you know, for a while now, we've been taking Comfrey, chop and drop it, throw it right in the mulch ring. Well, another, and I tried to give credit, but I don't remember your name. It happened so long ago. They said, look, I suspect this would happen. It would work 10 times better if you were to take that Comfrey and then cover it up with a carbon layer. And he
take
was
the,
at,
the cut Comfrey leaves and cover it with
throw
a
it down and then throw
carbon
some,
layer.
Right. And so I did it. I mean, before it's just, it works just fine if you just want to take the Comfrey, chop and drop and throw it on there. But what I did notice is that when you do that, it dries out super quick and, you know, it does its thing. But it attracted way more worms when I covered it up with a carbon layer. I should have known that. But that's exactly what I'm hoping with everything we do. Well, look, y'all, we have zero ego when it comes to this. And I mean that. I mean, we really have no ego whatsoever. So if you can offer an improvement, believe me, and it doesn't just have to go with us. It can go with anybody. Offer that improvement or do a video in how you can do it and improve upon it, folks. That's what this community, that's the whole, if we didn't have this, honestly, I would have jumped off this YouTube. We don't have to do it. I would have jumped off it long ago if I didn't realize, oh my goodness, man, look at all these wonderful people I met.
Right. That's really what's made it worth it. There isn't much, you don't get much satisfaction without you guys doing YouTube videos.
No, that's absolutely true. I mean, the interaction is better than anything I'd hoped for. I was so jaded by, you know, the nefarious things that go on the talk radio about all the things they tell you. Folks, I'll talk about that in greater detail in the future about all the things you're not allowed to talk about and then all of the things that were happening years ago in places like Facebook and all these others. And why I was content to really say, look, you know, we're good to go. I don't think we need to be involved in any of this stuff.
That's the benefit of not having time slots or advertisers.
Well, there is that. Yeah. That's what I love about this podcast, especially, is that we have the, I think right now, the best of both worlds, despite the fact that YouTube's playing games with the numbers
and
everything right
they
now.
They really are playing games with
them.
Yeah. So, I mean, just it's like petty attacks. It's like, oh, now you're going to have to re-upload this video twice because we did it with no audio. or like, I'm going to change the monetization on this video and stuff like that.
And they just do it automatically.
Yeah,
things that should be already set up.
We have to go, yeah, so the monetization should already be set up before a live stream or a video goes up, but they'll go back over and change it.
Well, you know, that's the beauty of having this. And guess what? There's other platforms out there. You know, like I said, if you were to consider the money you make for YouTube, y'all, it's pennies compared to the effort that you put into it. So if you think you're going to make money on YouTube, now there are people that do it, and there's some even within this community that do that. Maybe not so much in the permaculture realm, but in the homesteading realm. Yeah, they probably make a pretty good living at it, but I think it's foolish to simply rely on that alone.
You also get paid differently depending on your demographic. Like, you're going to get paid more if you have the women between like 20, what is it, like 24 to 36 or something like that, because they spend the most money online. So you're going to get paid more from the advertisers for having that demographic. If you have the demographic of between like 40 to 60 year old men, well, then you get paid less for per view.
Well, that may be part of it too. But also, when I talked to some other YouTubers, I don't want to give their names here, but believe me, within the homesteading space, if I said their names, you'd probably know, but they've had trouble as well. And I can't help but wonder if the powers that shouldn't be have an interest to make sure that people that really need this information, maybe they aren't getting it. But it's hard for me to believe that all of a sudden overnight, the people that are watching this, I'm like, okay, go ahead and do whatever, because honestly, if they were to scrub us from YouTube, which I'm sure is going to happen at some point in time, well, there are other platforms out there.
Well, that makes sense that it's happening right now, because they could probably blame a lot of this stuff. Usually around August every year, they start cleaning out some of the bots on YouTube. They start thinning them out. So they could be trying to just blame it on, you know, their bot cleanup at the moment.
Right. That could be it. Hey, before I forget, I want to make sure also the people wondering where we get those nitrogen fixing shirts and where we get some of the other bomb permaculture shirts that we have, like the one I have that says permaculture. Guess what? Eric Sider's YouTube channel. In fact, when we do have a guest, Eric is going to be the very first guest for a whole bunch of reasons.
Yep.
And not only is the guy wicked smart, just a wonderful dude. I'm not gonna lead into it too much right now. But honestly, Eric was the one who came up with the name Permaculture Pimpcast.
Yeah.
That was his idea.
Yep. He created our first logo too.
Yeah. Yeah. Eric's.
His channel will be linked down below.
So when we do have a guest, guess what? Right out of the gates, I'm going to save the suspense. It's going to be Eric Sider. I've already talked to him about it, and I'm looking forward to it. So we'll set that up in the future. Now, let's move on to the news part of it. Now, remember, folks, if you're new to this podcast, when we cover news, it's going to be things that specifically pertain to gardening, things on the homestead that might concern you, okay? My friends, Nicole at over at Living Free in Tennessee, you want to check out her podcast along with her YouTube channel, along with John at SOE, both of which we're going to see here in probably a few hours, maybe by the end of today. We're going to hit the road.
Probably at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well, folks, I really want you to go and check out what they had on their YouTube channel. You can see it at Living Free in Tennessee and Special Operations Equipment. Both of them have a YouTube channel. They interviewed a guy, the Renegade Butcher. I hope to meet this guy. The reason I'm saying you need to check it out is that there is an assault in every single way you can imagine when it comes to your food. I know many of you already know this, but I want you to hear his perspective on it. And he's at a place in the world, Texas, where a lot of these freedoms, you know, there's certain things that you assume that you have as a freedom in places like Texas and other places, but I don't want to foreshadow too much where you don't check it out, but please check it out. It is well worth your time. It's well worth the visit to go check this out. That is definitely worth it.
Some of these states that are claiming to be, you know, free and stuff like that also have their trade-offs. So just keep that in mind.
Well, in Texas, the biggest trade-off is that, and we didn't know this right off, state tax, all this other wonderful stuff that they tell you. Then you get there, and then you only find out that, oh, they got a big profit for a prison thing. I mean, cops will shake you down, at least where we live. They will shake you down for the change in your pockets. Meanwhile, I mean, folks, we could tell you stories, and maybe we will in the future, but for us, And where we lived in Texas, it was much better in the brochure when they take William to jail for having a dirty license plate.
Or how many people had rap sheets where you worked?
Right. 135 guys, I think, in that shop, or 130, may have been somewhere around there. And 100 of them were in between court dates thanks to that system. But I don't want to digress too much. We'll talk about that in the future as far as strategic relocation. All right, regarding that news, we covered that first part with the Renegade Butcher. You want to check that out. And if you'll notice, the news section here ain't your typical, hey, this is necessarily what's going on in the world about us. It is news to me because these people do not have a history of lying to me. I got a long list of friends that don't have a history of lying to me. So when they give me something, I have to ask myself, huh, is that newsworthy? Because I get stuff from a lot of the folks out here listening right now, a lot of the folks on YouTube. And there's other YouTubers out there that are having experiences. Well, is it any less news? Like Shakespeare said, would a rose by any other name not smell as sweet? Is it still not news, you know, in the way that the town crier used to deliver it back in the day? But here's another piece of this news, y'all, and you really got to check this out. And it kind of, in a certain way, goes on the heels of what we just talked about. Now, this one is coming from the Burning Platform, and the source article comes from Dr. Mercola. Dig this. They came up, this is a Food Compass thing. It had a bunch of government subsidy, okay? The Friedman School of Nutrition and Science Policy basically unveiled this thing in late 2021. And basically, look at it as a food pyramid. Son, is there any way to link this article?
Yeah, yep. It'll be linked down in the description.
Okay, because I want y'all to see this. Now, the... they get, instead of having this food pyramid, which, by the way, if you read Dr. William Davis's book, Wheat Belly, and then you look at some of the other stuff from a lot of the naturopaths out there, you'll find out Dr. Wallach was one of them that talked about it, Dr. Peter Glidden as well. I mean, the list is long. If you look at the old food pyramid and you look at the lobbying money that was delivered to each person or each entity on that pyramid, the higher the lobbying money, the lower they were on the food pyramid. And the least amount of money, guess what? They made it to the top. So it was all a political hack scheme all the way. And then, of course, you know, the government was involved as well. But now, dig this. So at Tufts, they basically came up with this food pyramid, and it's not a pyramid. It's like a ranking system from 0 to 100. And with 100 being the best thing you can possibly put in your body, 0 being the worst. Okay, son, can you dig it? What's at the top of this
number
list?
Number 1 is watermelon. Number 2 is kale. Actually, they're tied.
Yeah, but
watermelon and kale is tied for the best thing in your body.
Let's say it is wonderful, but what's number 3? Did you even notice that?
Yeah, number 3 is frosted mini wheats, which, okay, what stuck out to me, boiled egg is 51. So 51 means like it's to be moderated. Green, like the higher numbers, is to be encouraged. So Honey Nut Cheerios, chocolate covered almonds, almond milk, frosted mini wheats, all that stuff is better for you than a boiled egg.
Yeah, but you know what the worst thing, dude, I can't even believe this. I mean, I don't understand how anybody can listen to anything coming from these mainstream prostitutes. And yes, I include Fox News in there too, for anybody that thinks I'm left or right. They are all prostitutes. Okay, the bottom of this list, the worst thing you can eat, ground beef, cheddar cheese. Okay, ground beef is the worst, second worst, cheddar cheese, and the third worst, whole egg fried in butter.
I can live off whole eggs fried in butter. I can't live off kale. Something will eventually die if I live off kale.
Yeah, one way or the other. Son, the thing that's getting me is everything, you talked about it before, you're like, they want to kill us. And when you talk about they, the list is long. I mean, these Malthusian lunatics out there, what floors me, what absolutely knocks my junk into my watch pocket is the fact that there is even a person out there that could believe this garbage.
Well, they don't even have to kill you. They don't even necessarily have to kill you. They just have to stop you from being able to reproduce.
Well, they're doing a pretty good job of that. And man, there's a story that I can't really talk about. I talked to you earlier about it, of a friend of mine dealing with this very same thing where, you will believe, what floors me is that somebody, I could have this conversation, and In the course of that conversation, they will ask me for reference after reference after reference, and then people call you a conspiracy theorist when you can just cite these references. I have no history of lying to you, but you will, without a doubt, right off the bat and whole cloth, believe these known prostitute liars, y'all. So, look, just be cautious about the people you're hearing your stuff from, and just put it through the crucible of your own mind and ask yourself, does this possibly make any sense? Nothing more than a bargaining chip. Marketing is what they tell you to do and what you're willing to give. LARPing to the fullest extent. I don't wait, I shoot first like Han on a Rodian. These people don't understand me like reading an Nokian. Stretched in like pulling an accordion. My heart ain't primordial. All these historians telling us lies, setting aside. Everything is medicalized. Politicians selling the ride. A better man die. Well, I could not pick a better song. Actually, you picked. Well, no, I'm taking credit for that.
You did pick up the song, Dan.
I could not have picked a better song to break right back into this. Okay, we're going to talk about Community. And, man, I love that music, man.
Yeah, Dad is a music Nazi when it comes to the podcast or the YouTube channel, guys.
Especially the YouTube channel. The podcast, everybody's expecting something wild. But on YouTube, man, he's over here breaking out. It's just poor communication.
Dad has had the final say on all the music so far. So if you don't like it, take it up with him.
There was parts of it that, you know, weren't exactly Dad approved. All right, so we're going to get into Community. And if you look, there was a lot of this stuff that's kind of led into it. We talked about Eric, and we talked about Jack Spearco, which, by the way, being on that interview with Jack Spearco really was something. That was a joy I did not expect. I mean, I've been listening to that dude since 2008, and I never thought I'd ever be a guest on there.
Yeah, Emily kept asking me, like, is he almost done yet?
Yeah, dude, I was on there, what, 2.5 hours?
2.5 hours, something like that, yeah.
Wow, and it seemed like it was 20 minutes, man, but that was a cool thing about meeting Jack in person. You know, when you, and I kind of said it in that interview, is that when you get a bunch of alphas in one room, there's always a feeling out period, and he did it with me, I did it with him, I did it with everybody else, and they did it with me. And, of course, there were plenty of ladies there as well. But when you get that many alphas in one place, it's either you're either going to spill blood or you're going to be the best of friends. And so I'm glad the latter happened. And it was just a real joy. And also it was a really good thing, man, to be able to we try to keep things on the lighter side, at least in the podcast. And it was cool to be able to do that with him and for him to give me the liberty to do it. But honestly, on a more serious note, I don't know that there's anybody that's inspired more liberty-minded people to know what permaculture was. And I'm hoping and praying that with podcasts like the one we have, and also with the one that Jack has, is that more and more and more of those people that are in the building trades, that are in, you know, mechanics, that are doing little side jobs, these are the people that I'm hoping and praying that we can reach through this. And also through the YouTube and everybody else. And I mean guys and gals. People that are out there putting foot to butt in a big way, and I'm hoping that people from the leftist tradition get a little bit of challenge in this. So with that said, as far as Community, well, son, I just built one. I've been building, and you have too. Think about how our community has expanded just in the last several months, you know. Now,
yeah, since like March.
Right. We're friends now. I mean, let me just kind of take stock of the people everybody else out here might know. In just a very short time, you know, you know, here it is, already friends with Deep South. But what did that take? I had to reach out to him and say, hey, could I come visit?
Jason, too.
Jason from So The Land. Oh, yeah, I'm getting over there. Holler Homestead, got to know them. And Ben, man, I would love to have, if we ever get into a show where we talk about esoteric topics, I wonder if I could get Ben to come on with us.
Yeah.
That would be interesting. I don't know that he'd want to do it, but he's got a lot of really awesome talents. And
Renewed Homestead, met them through YouTube.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just been a ton of people. If nothing else, if you start a YouTube channel, I mean, with, you know, a purpose, if you start a YouTube channel and you're just in it to meet new people or meet like-minded people, that's not a bad goal to have. That would be worth it.
You're going to be absolutely shocked if you do that, even if it's, and folks, don't think about, well, I'm just a small YouTube channel. That's absurd. I mean, look at the majority of the people I've interviewed. They are people that many of which, you know, didn't have much of a following at all. Look, one person is a following, okay? Just like I told that guy that I did an interview not long ago with, Hour 73. And he was asking me, he was like, man, I can't believe you're taking time out of your day. I'm like, dude, what you don't realize is that I have never given up the idea of being able to communicate. And I hope and pray that I never do. I communicate on an individual basis. When I was on the job, anybody that would listen to what I had to say, they knew about permaculture, or at least They knew I was into it, or anybody that would lend an ear. Like Shakespeare says, lend every man thine ear, but not every man thy voice. Well, I gave him my voice.
Yeah.
Probably to people that didn't or shouldn't have done it to. Or
Dad will go and talk to random people at the grocery store.
And I didn't always used to be that way. It was since, honestly, getting this community on YouTube. So with that said, I mean, honestly, I could go forever and a day, but let me just add some more honorable mentions. Just in months, Matt and Gabby. You know, we met them. They're going to be doing
James and Ashley.
I mean,
that's Strand Farm and also Homestead for a Living.
Yeah. I mean, they just happen to have YouTube channels. So, folks, even if you have one, even if you have or you're thinking about having it, look, I know you're going to be self-conscious about making a video. Maybe not put yourself on there initially, but it has proven to be a massive source to get to know a bunch of awesome people out there. Two Old Crows Homestead, you know, they saved Marv Bacon twice. And you look at SOE, what we learned from John.
Yeah, how to conduct business.
Yeah, Nicole, look at what we learned from her. I mean, she is an absolute whiz in so many different ways. And then we can collaborate, and now people that didn't know about them, now they do from us. And people that didn't know about us, now they do from them.
Right.
And so it's the same thing with everybody out there. So yes, if you are thinking about doing a YouTube channel, don't be afraid to, because you will be shocked. All the people that write to me and say, I don't know where I can find community. Well, maybe start right there. That's a really good place, because electronically you could potentially be best friends with a person over in Spain. So let's not think about that. What are some of the other places you can go to try to find some community?
You can go to these festivals, but you have to actually go and talk to somebody.
That's the biggest problem I saw at Homesteaders of America when I went there that first year and it wasn't much of a problem, because I would be the one just go up to, if you were standing in front of me, if you were there and you're listening to this podcast, you know, I'm telling the truth. If you were standing there and I didn't see you talking to somebody, I walked right up to you and said, hey, how you doing? My name is Billy. Nobody knew who I was.
Well, it's not just like that at Homesteaders of America. It's like that at the Back to the Land Festival. Not as bad at the SOE Festival, the Self-Reliance Festival. It's not as bad there, but the Back to the Land Festival and Homesteaders of America, you know.
Many of us tend to be introverts, you know, and plus we live a lifestyle that grants us a great deal of isolation. And even within that isolation, there's even more isolation. So I spend a fair amount of time listening when I can to podcasts, YouTubes if I'm within range.
YouTube,
what did I say?
You said YouTubes.
Yeah, so there's more than one. Okay, this plural. It is now anyway. There's all these different ways in which I'm able to connect to at least to some extent, but this human interaction is something that we all desire and crave, and that's the problem I've seen at a lot of these homesteader things. Everybody is typically very introverted, and if you're not the one to go up there, even if you are, just go up there and say, hi, what do you do? And I promise you that most introverted person in many times will just come alive and tell you everything, and they will, and before you know it, 5 minutes later, you got yourself a friend.
Especially if you notice that they have a specific shirt on, like their own farm
that
or something
helps.
Like that. Yeah, just ask them about what their farm does and stuff like that. Or if you see them recording, ask them about, you know, what their channel's about.
And you may be shy, but here's how you get over that. Don't go up there thinking about what you have to say. Just ask them about themselves, because you already have it in common. You're in the same place, folks. Believe me, I know what that feels like, to feel like, oh, gee, everybody's worried about being rejected. It has never happened. Hi, how you doing? Where are you from? What do you farm? What do you do? And then there'll be those people that, you know, a lot of them, believe it or not, are not at all engaged in it. They're there because they're
wanting to learn. They're trying to make the transition. They're looking for land.
They're farm curious.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're farm curious. So they're hoping and praying that somebody will go up. So be that one. As tough as it is sometimes, or you think that this person might be a, you know, maybe you see them on YouTube and you think they're a celebrity, folks, please don't do that with me. I am.
Yeah.
It embarrasses
just regular.
Me.
We're filming ourselves. It's not like there was an outside interest that said, oh, these people are cool. Let's go record them.
I ain't nobody special, man. Yeah. I'm really not. So please don't act as if I am. And if I ever get to feeling that way, then it's time to move on. I won't do this anymore. So don't feel there's a lot of people that come up with their hat in their hand like I'm somebody special. I'm not. I'm no different than anybody else. And neither is anybody else out there, y'all. And if they get to acting that way, then you just knock the dust off your boots and keep on. Because I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're Tom Cruise. If you behave a certain way, if you act like a jerk with the people out there that love and support you, then, I don't care what your status or rank is, bro. I'll tell you to piss off like I will anybody else. So, and it's happened before too. I won't name any names, but it has happened. So at these conferences, okay, we covered YouTube.
Right.
We covered, okay, there's social media. I guess you'll never hear me be a champion for Facebook. No presence there.
You could go that route. But from what I've heard on these homestead groups on Facebook, there seems to be more drama than, like, there's one know-it-all on there that'll argue with anybody about anything. And if it's not their way, then it's not the right way.
And you'll find out that same person, if you were to be at a convention or whatever, they'll behave totally different.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of internet bullies out there. And they'll say things in these things, as you well know, that, they would never dream of saying to your face.
Yeah, use the internet to find places that you can meet people in person.
There you go. And that's where, all with this sweet and sour sniffles, thanks to Jericho Green for that. I mean, I said it a couple of times. And I didn't give reference. That's where it came from. shout out to him for that. So anyway, because of all that, it's made a lot of us acquiesce. It made a lot of us hermits. It made a lot of us say, okay, I'm just not going to leave the house, or we live in this fear. But we've not been given a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. And that means getting off your butt and getting out there. Okay, so let's just say you don't have a YouTube. Let's say you don't have this, you don't have that. Well, guess what? What are some of the local places you might go? One jumps out to me right off.
Well, the farmer's market.
Bam.
For one.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Farmer's market, you go there, you will be shocked.
Yeah, just go up to somebody. You see like a husband and wife there at a booth. Go up to them. If you're wanting to practice or something like that, just go up to them and say, hey, can I come work for you guys for a year? I'm interested in this lifestyle. Or not a year, for a day.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wouldn't start off with that.
Can I come work for you for a day?
Y'all got an extra room up in that house,
yeah,
man?
Can I get some ideas on how to farm and homestead?
I'll give you my name once I move in.
Yeah, and also buy product.
Yeah, it helps, honestly. If you get, like, what I've done in the past at some of these conventions, okay, when there was somebody whose attention I wanted to get, and 9 times out of 10, it's an author or so. I remember I did this with Cody Holmes years ago. It was in Missouri at the Organic Growers Conference, and there was a gang of people out there, and he had this stack of books. Not one person was buying his book, but I wanted to ask him something about the way he does pigs.
Right.
Well, the number one way to get to the front of that line? Picked up that book, bought it. I'm sitting there holding his book, and I can't remember what he was asking for it, but I had $40 flashed right there holding the book. I don't know who was next in line, but it was me. Because, and then while I said, hey, so you can get more of his time by saying, hey, would you sign this book? Now, look, y'all, we're all farmers, and you got to make a living. And so he sees a guy wanting to buy his book. Well, guess what? I just jumped to the front of the line, and while he's signing that book, I didn't care if he signed it or not. It was a good book, by the way. But,
and also keep in mind that he's probably tired of answering the questions that are answered in his book that people are asking him in person.
Exactly. Yeah. And I knew that this question, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was something very different. And then there's always that one person who fails to recognize that there are other people in line.
Right.
Well, I circumvent it. And I've done this way more than once because they know that, hey, this person is at least a little bit serious if they're going to buy my book. Well, I could tell by some of the way the people were looking at me. I'm like, hey, y'all break bread, buy his book. Maybe he'll put you next in line. So there's that way. I don't even know why I went into that. But the point being,
How to connect with people.
Well, if you buy
farmers
their product,
markets and
yeah.
stuff like that, buy their product.
Yeah. Even if you have a little bit of change, but like William said, that could be used to give you a little bit of self-confidence to go over there when you go to one of these conferences. Or like you take Darren and Grumpy at that last one. Dude, Darren didn't even get to listen to nothing because he's constantly answering questions about how to do everything. That's what you get, Darren, for naming your thing Hacks for the Homestead.
Yeah, you're going to have to do some problem solving.
Yeah.
And yeah, Grumpy, too. He was fielding questions, too.
Right.
That table, our booth at that festival was basically a booth fielding questions and on the side selling products.
Right, right. So if you buy those products, y'all, you will. And I'm not saying you need to buy something to get an answer. We will answer everybody's question when you see us. But the point being, if you want to get a little bit of practice and if you want to meet somebody who may be put upon, well, you'll get their attention if you're buying what they sell. It helps. And even if you don't, look, we're gonna help you out either way. There's a lot of people with different means, and we don't base it on anything other than your interest in doing this. I am just fascinated.
Here's the caveat, though. You cannot come up to me and give me a list of reasons why the chicken tractor on steroids does not work, and you have never done it. You can't do that. Can't do that.
Well, that is an issue, yeah, but... Well, think about other places, too. So we talked about YouTube's. I won't go down the whole list again. Conferences are a really good place. And believe it or not, farmers markets, I save the best, honestly, for last, because that can lead. And it doesn't even have to be a person having a booth.
No. Clearly everybody at the farmers market has the same interest.
There you go. That's why when you go to these conferences, breaking the ice is really easy, because we all, whenever we're there... Believe it or not, whether you know it or not, we all feel marginalized to a certain extent. And it's in a place like that where we find our tribe, our community. It's in a place like that. But I know a lot of you need a little bit of practice. Go up there, go to the farmer's market, but talk to the people around there. You would be absolutely shocked at how many other people that are shopping there are looking for the same exact thing you are.
They're most likely buying it until they can produce it themselves, for the most part.
There you go.
The hard work has already been done for you. It's not like we're telling you to go to Walmart and randomly go up to people, say, hey, are you interested in farming? Hi, do you like permaculture?
Yeah.
You don't have to be that person. You're already congregated in the same place. You can just go up to anybody and they have the same interest as you.
But you find out that a lot of people are isolated because they are very, very shy and don't want to hook up with somebody else in terms of asking things that they already know about. Okay, think about some of these other things, okay? There was a, where we live, I remember when I first got here, Jason was pretty much the only one we knew.
Right.
And I didn't even know him that well, Jason from Sow the Land. And he did so many wonderful things, invited us to his church, and, you know, we went there, and, you know, there were so many different things. He showed an interest in us right off the bat, and for that, I'm always eternally grateful for Jason, you know, reaching out, going out of his way to be community for us. And so even in a place like that where it's church, no doubt, one of the first things people always, and maybe you're not a person of faith like us or somebody else, and not that you have to go to church to be that person, but it could also be like somewhere online. Like I go to church right now online through Pastor Lon at Homesteading Pastor. Okay. There's a bunch of reasons for that. And maybe in the future, if anybody has any interest as to why that's the case, maybe email me and maybe we can cover some of that in this podcast. But in that environment, you would be shocked at how many people, let's say it's a brick and mortar church, how many people, the first thing they're going to ask, especially among guys, and I hate the question, it's, what do you do?
Yeah, it's the first question all the time.
Yeah, I really don't like that question. I remember going to a church. It was a church in Oklahoma. You were a baby still at the time. And it was like this social suck-up session that existed there. And people would qualify you by asking that question. And then depending on how you answered, you would see their behavior. There'd be a room full of people. And you would see their behavior change distinctly. But forget about all that. The important thing is that within that community, you might very well find, hey, so-and-so over there, they farm also. That's exactly what happened to us, where somebody mentioned something to Jason and Lorraine, and Lorraine pointed them in the direction of us when they mentioned permaculture.
Yeah.
So there's another way. Believe it or not,
Their demeanor would definitely change if you said you were the permaculture pimp daddy.
I'm a pimp, y'all. Yeah, dude. You know what? I wonder how that would absolutely go down. They say, yeah, well, I'm a pimp. And then just kind of let it sit for a second or two and then explain.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might be interesting. There's other places out there. Now, if you're going to use some of these social media things, there are places like Jason told me about when we first got here. It was called Conscious Homesteaders of Madison County. Now,
well,
the
that
main,
was a Facebook group, Dad.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I'm saying. Yeah. They did have meetings where they got together, but I looked to see if they had a website. At the time, they did not. But when I hear something like conscious, I'm like, okay, I'm a little suspicious because I'm thinking about which way could this go, but you're not going to know unless you go. So apparently they had a lot of potlucks where people that didn't know each other, they show up. Here's another thing. Let's say you have an interest in beekeeping.
All right.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Forget the classes.
There you go.
Go to most likely your county has like a group that gets together, get with those people.
Ben over at Renewed Homestead, he right. got PhD level instruction for like $60.
Yeah.
And so he learned a lot, clearly. And here's what I'm getting at is you will find out that in these subgroups, like beekeeping and stuff like that, they are some of the tightest knit community you're ever going to find. And their biggest passion is to create more beekeepers.
Well,
so
and then
you can
a lot
meet
of the,
other people within that thing.
Yeah. And then you can also get your bees and your equipment in that circle as well. Instead of paying like hundreds of dollars for a hive and a whole setup and all that stuff, a lot of these old timers who are retired, their hobby is going and picking up swarms or like bees that are in like inappropriate places, like gutters on a school or
something
like that.
And they're giving
this
stuff away.
Yeah. And they have to give it away because most likely their boxes are full.
But the point being is that within these groups, whether it's a flower, let's say you're part of a gardening club, believe it or not, that is a massive way to meet some very, very awesome people. These little clubs where it might be even a hiking group. If they don't know, they know somebody else. Find something that is already in. Look, I get so many responses from people, whether it's on the YouTube channel or even in an email where you're talking about this isolation and how you're having a difficult time. They're asking me a lot of times, hey, do you know anybody down in Georgia? Do you know anybody over here?
Oh yeah. All the time I get asked, like, do you know anybody in like specific locations?
And that's right. And so I get it so much that we're doing this podcast to address that very thing. Now you could drop me off anywhere and I will find a way to be entertained. Not everybody's built that way. So for all of you folks out there that say, like the one lady who reached out a while ago, it was on Patreon, she wanted to go out here and do the chicken tractor on steroids, but was very, very shy. And I'm thinking, okay, well, she's really the one that kind of evoked all this. I've been working on this in my head, trying to come up with a long list of things for all those people. I understand you're shy. Look, I'm married to a shy woman.
Well, here's an easy way to get past the shyness. Go up and meet somebody and acknowledge the fact that you're shy. Don't pretend you're not. Just acknowledge the fact that you're shy and say, hey, I'm shy, but I wanted to come and talk to you. Most likely, they were, you know, kind of shy as well. And then you just broke the ice and then you acknowledge that you're both shy. Nobody has to pretend about it. And then you can just move on from there.
Or their graciousness comes through just by somebody laying themselves bare. This is even in that book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, is that when you lay yourself bare, there's a fundamental, unless they're a total complete sociopath. When you lay yourself bare like that to somebody, I mean, think about it. If they came up to you, it's no different. It is a little different. If somebody came up with you with a wound, your natural compulsion should be to want to help that person. Well, it's no different when they
Hold on. If you're driving down a country road and somebody, depending on the level of wounds, you might you might speed up.
Yeah. But in most cases, when you lay yourself bare like that, they're going to feel the graciousness in these people will come through in the most massive way, especially when you're in a place where, you know, like Darren at that last one, you know, people are coming up and we can't answer the questions, but Darren is 10 times more suited to answer that question. Or maybe there's a group of us standing around. Do not feel, because I see this all the time at these things, there's that person over there that's a bump on the log. And if I see that going on, I will go out of my way to go up and say, hi, how you doing? Maybe you know who I am, maybe you don't, but it might have given you the boost you need to go out there and say hi. And listen, if you're one of a more extra, I'm an introvert and an extrovert. I'm both. I'm very, very comfortable in my own skin, in my own space, in my own mind. And I need that every single day. But also I can be extroverted too when I'm in a crowd of people that I like, which I'm almost certainly going to be around this weekend.
Yeah, Dad's kind of both. I don't really know how to explain it, but he's kind of both. He needs He needs both in his life, the interaction and the solitude.
I need a whole lot of solitude too, but I also enjoy, if we're going to sit there, if only thing you got to talk about is NASCAR and football, then I really can't have an intelligent conversation regarding that. But I don't, you tell me about your grandkids, tell me about your kids. Yeah, I'm interested. Tell me about anything else. You're telling me about pop culture, whoever the latest singer is. Like Joel Salatin once said, you know, he says, man, I don't know anything about that stuff, but there's a lot of other things that I know a lot about, and I can have conversations that way. Or I don't care what it is. Just go up to these people, churches, libraries, bookstores.
Yeah. I mean, the reason I'm mentioning bookstores have been crazy lately.
Well, the reason I'm mentioning that is that a lot of meetup groups meet at bookstores because they have private conference rooms, just like they do in libraries. So there's a lot of these meetups. Go to meetup, a hiking group. It could be anything. Look, folks,
Permies.com. I'm pretty sure they have a section there that kind of breaks it up into states.
Oh, yeah. 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 Paul Wheaton has Permies.com. You might want to check it out too. He does extraordinary work in his own way. And folks, I'm not trying to beat a dead horse. This is a topic that we get bombarded about. And I'm asking even those of you out there, please, even the ones that are more extroverted and you don't have a problem going up and talking to a total stranger, go up and do what I'm asking you to do. And believe me, you're going to be thankful that you did. If you see that shy person sitting over there, go up there. And the best way to break the ice is, hi, what do you do?
Well, here's an important thing to point out. 2 years ago, do you think you would have been telling people this?
No, I wouldn't have. I was very comfortable, very much in my isolation. Very, very.
I mean, would you have been encouraging people to build community? Because at that point, we weren't really trying to, we were trying to, you know, do everything ourselves.
Right. We were avoiding community because of all the bad decisions we made regarding, you know, trying to link up with family and do a lot of this stuff. And then, you know, it was a bad idea every single time. And if I exercised better judgment from the get-go, we wouldn't have made some of those colossal mistakes of linking up with unproductive people. So before you get into any of that community, before you go further down that hole, first of all, you want to check out Nicole from Living Free in Tennessee. Definitely go back to her and check all that out. She talks a lot about community, and she has a successful community, which is important.
Right. Yeah, she is one of the few successful communities.
A lot of these cooperative communities, man, when we were looking at this stuff back in Kansas, man, there was some of this. I ain't kidding y'all. I'm not trying to be funny. But honestly, they had wife swapping communities in Kansas. And there was these other communities where
it's not too surprising that it's Kansas.
I didn't even know what polyamorous was, man. I'm like, what's this mean? And when I figured out, I'm like, okay, man, y'all.
Sounds like a Pokemon.
I'm like, dude, this is so whacked out.
It's pink.
Who can engage in this kind of stuff? But hey, if that's the community you're into, you knock yourself out. But I don't know of too many successful. And Paul, speaking of Paul Wheaton, he's done a great deal of research on that as well. A lot of these communities do not make it because you're binding yourselves on some really freaky stuff. And when you get down to brass tacks, man, you know, how far does that stuff really go?
The only one who's following the permaculture design manual and creating a community is Nicole.
I totally agree. I mean, she's probably got the most successful community I know of. So check out Living Free in Tennessee. Check out her podcast, which is second to none. You want to check out her YouTube also. It's not just promoting my friends here, y'all. It's the fact that they are, if you're looking for, Nicole is better suited, honestly, to talk about this than anybody else I know of.
Maybe that should be a future guest.
Yeah, well, no doubt about that. We'll have her on there for a whole variety of reasons. But folks, all of you people that are writing and you're in complete solitude, or, you know, you're stuffed away and you're thinking you can't find community, look, we just provided some really awesome places. So we'll get to your Q&A when we get back. Because that's what warriors do. That's right. That's what warriors do, y'all. We got to be a warrior. So, okay, getting back into the Q&A now.
You got to pick up the sword, Dan.
The sword.
The sword.
The sword. You got to pick up the sword. Okay, so we got a lot of Q&A. And folks, once again, if I don't address you directly, trust me, there are a lot of other people that have had the same issue. This one here came from Andy. And Andy, I would love to be able to give your business a shout out here, but you didn't give me permission to do so. Basically, Andy does a lot of lawn work, and, you know, thank you for the thanks. Andy's basically saying he doesn't do a whole lot of podcasts, but, you know, he did check us out, and, you know, he really likes it. So thank you so much for that, Andy. And he was saying you were doing one on zones, and, you know, let me get down to the most relevant part. All of it's relevant, but the part, well, this is relevant. He said he's had really good luck with the bone sauce, putting it on this tomato steaks and stuff like that, kept them out. But he was really, if I encapsulate what he's saying here, is that people are so brainwashed, and that's his word, and I agree with him, that, you know, the notion of putting anything edible in the front yard is just ain't working out.
Yeah, especially, do you know where he's located?
No, he didn't say any of that, but basically he does this for a living.
It's especially in the South. It's like Southern women, for some reason, do not want fruit trees near the front door.
Not all Southern women.
Well, not all Southern women.
But it's the only place we ever ran into where... Right. Every time you turn around and you're the notion of planting a fruit tree, from my sister-in-law to countless others, the response was, and I quote, who's going to pick the fruit?
Yeah. Which, I mean,
I'm like, what? I didn't even know how.
It should be a celebration.
Yeah.
Waited 4 years.
Who's going to pick the fruit? But, you know, Andy's in here talking about the notion of anybody putting this stuff in their front yards. All they want is ornamental stuff in the front yard, shrubs, this and that. They may live in a postage stamp yard. And if they do consent to a garden, it's always got to be hidden in the backyard as if it's some sort of, like it's something you shouldn't talk about. Like what will the neighbors think?
Yeah, like you're the crazy gardener or something like that.
Look, the whole notion of a lawn, look, folks, I'm not going to tell anybody to go out and support Amazon. And I got mixed feelings about all that, but there was a thing on there called Monty Don, M-O-N-T Monty, and his last name was Don, and he had this thing about gardening, and he confirmed a lot of what I'd known over the years. You know, when you study this stuff, you learn a lot about these things, but the thing that really floored me was the whole notion of a lawn came from basically aristocrats way back when that viewed having a garden or having a monocrop, that was... You got to go all the way back to Sir Francis Bacon and the New Atlantis, that the idea of subjugating nature to do your will was something that it was something to be desired. It was something the very elite did. So having a monocrop of just green grass on a flat ground was something only the royalty did. So, you know, just like everybody else on down the line, we emulate royalty. Have you ever noticed it in the 43andMe or whenever you do a genealogy thing, everybody's related to some Duke or Earl or whatever.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. They always tell you this. You're always related to some royalty, but find me royalty in the history of your life that has ever immigrated when things were doing good. So, yeah. So,
which is the whole idea behind a French garden though, is conquering nature that's where, you know, you see the French espalier with the tree growing up against the wall, making these 90-degree turns and all that stuff. That whole idea is behind, you know, conquering nature.
And it all came from, actually came all the way back from Plato, if you get down to it. But Sir Francis Bacon was the New Atlantis. Some people even thought Sir Francis Bacon was Shakespeare, but that's another story altogether. Very interesting stuff. But the whole idea of a lawn, but think at how deep these roots run when people feel the need that they have to do a lawn when there's nothing in the code that says you can't grow anything out there in most cases.
But also I wonder what they're picturing in their head, because you can grow food out in your front yard and nobody will even notice. There are ways to do that.
Well,
unless they're very familiar with plants.
So think about this, folks. Just even if you're putting shrubs up near the house, maybe they could be blueberries, depending on how the sun lays. Maybe it's another shrub. Maybe it's something that produces something. But if you can dig up the front yard, I remember that I worked with this guy in Oklahoma years ago, and he had these Vietnamese living next door to him. It was this black dude, man, and he thought it was the most disgusting thing in the world that these people were growing corn in the front yard. And he talks about his cousin pulling up there, and he was living in a hood. He talks about his cousin living up, pulling up there, and he said he hadn't seen his cousin in 20 years. He describes this dude all pimped out in his pimped out car. He said he ain't seen him in 20 years. He steps out of the car, and all he can do, he didn't even look at him. He's like looking at his Vietnamese neighbor out there working his corn. So it was hilarious. Like, yo, man, they growing corn in the front yard, bruh. So, yeah, that was funny all to get.
So be the Vietnamese family.
There you go. Those people are smart. Very, very smart. So next question came from Tammy. Comfrey's not growing. Son, what's the reasons that we covered that earlier, but go ahead and hit it again.
Yeah, the potting soil, it could be the time of year. You may need to water it more often, or comfrey can just be finicky on when it pops up. Sometimes it can pop up in like 2 weeks. Sometimes it can take 3 or 4 months. It depends on where you have it, where you live, the type of soil you have it in. Just give it time. It will eventually pop up.
Hang in there. Okay, another comfrey question. And folks, this isn't a gratuitous sale or anything like that. We get a lot of these questions. That's the beauty of being able to have this podcast, is to go into deeper detail. This came from Stephanie. I ordered some comfrey recently, and I've received it. Cannot wait to plant them. My question is, can I divide the roots that I have into smaller pieces? I live in West Central Texas, and our drought and heat. Okay, I can stop right there. Well, she's also wanting to know if I can companion plant them with other things. All right, son, what do you say?
You can divide those roots up. I mean, comfrey can be propagated from any part of the plant, and it can be propagated from very small pieces. I wouldn't, though. I mean, we cut them to size, like an adequate size to grow a plant quickly.
Well, you're more guaranteed of success. Right. When it's over 2 inches long, when you cut those roots,
yeah,
you want them somewhere around the 2-inch range.
Yeah.
Now, I have seen slithers the size of a pencil lead come up.
Right. Yeah, those grow. Those will grow a comfrey plant. It's just going to take longer.
Yeah, but don't be asking for your money back, Stephanie, if you did that. No, you can maybe take a few of them and try that and just see how far you can go, because I've seen it both yes and no on that. We've taken some very, very moderate pieces. That's why when folks tell me it's not growing, I'm like, okay, well, there's usually a couple of reasons. Number one, you maybe sat it in a fridge for 6 months or sitting in potting soil. Yeah. Something like that. Now, as far as planting them with other things, now, son, what are the things that everybody says? They say, don't plant your comfrey too close to your fruit tree. It's going to kill it. It's going to do this. It's going to do that. Now,
the only reason I would say don't plant your comfrey too close to your fruit tree is if you plan on harvesting the root in the future. You can damage the roots of the fruit tree by, you know, digging right at the base of the fruit tree. So just keep that in mind if you plan on harvesting roots. But other than that, it can go right next to the fruit tree and you can just chop and drop right there.
You can. We typically, in the perfect world, I usually use my shovel handle, and I've done a Patreon video on that. I use the shovel handle as a gauge, and from the back of the shovel into where the metal meets the wood is typically the distance I like. It's the ideal distance, but it's not the end of the world, because we do have some within a foot of the actual tree.
We have some hiding smaller trees.
We've had to. We've had to do that based on space limitations. But there's so much garbage out there when it comes to comfrey about it'll do this, it'll kill that, shouldn't do this, shouldn't do that. We've planted it in the same mulch ring, I mean, like inches away from that tree, and it has done nothing but thrive. But like William said, if you intend to get those roots out of there, you might want to reconsider that when it comes to comfrey.
We also have it planted with sweet potatoes right now. And I don't know if it's going to work. Dad has better hopes for it.
I'm out there looking at it. Yeah. And I got to say, I'm thoroughly impressed so far. We cut back the comfrey. And Stephanie, this is the other part of that. We haven't done this experiment before, so I don't really know what to tell you just yet. But William did it, and I thought it was a stroke of genius, because you can keep taking the leaves off that comfrey as it, you know, you want it a little bit established, just a little bit. But these were comfrey crowns that we put in there.
Yeah, we put up crowns in there, which you could do the same thing with the comfrey plant. Just let it get established. It'll eventually develop a crown, which is where the leaves meet the roots.
I don't know that anybody's ever done an experiment like this with comfrey. So hopefully, Stephanie, we'll have a better answer for you as this thing unfolds. But already it's looking good, man. Those sweet potatoes, they were dying, not dying, but they weren't doing anything because the comfrey was shading it out.
Right.
So the idea was to constantly get those leaves from the comfrey and walk over there to the pigs because they're in close proximity, throw it over to them, and then just keep that as a constant source. And then when it's time to get those sweet potatoes, guess what? We dig it all up because it's in that
bed. Yeah, the comfrey root and the sweet potato. But if nothing else, we do get sweet potato vine from it. So there's a food yield there.
Right. So I was hoping, and I'm thinking, and I still suspect that once those sweet potato vines get out of there and we can let the comfrey grow. And this is just going to be a constant back and forth to find out. But no, with other things that we planted in very close proximity, whether it was blueberries and I mean, some of the only danger is that we saw is that the comfrey shaded it out.
It just outcompeted it. If we left it alone, it would have just outcompeted it. It grew back faster than I anticipated.
Right. So we've had issues with that. Now, we'll go ahead and cover this last one. James is asking, can he use tiny swales? He lives in a small place, and he's wondering, can he use tiny swales in his yard?
Absolutely. You can use what's called boomerang swales and do it directly for each tree. So you just dig like a small, I think it's like 6 feet wide.
Now, my man is in like one of those little small neighborhoods like in Massachusetts, man. And you can. I've done it. In the earliest videos we did on our YouTube channel, it was permaculture at work. And I went out there and I did this, you know, with a shovel. But I have seen other swales that were considerably smaller. Nicholas Bertner at his demonstration site.
Yeah.
He's at School of Permaculture.
And that was in Plano, Texas.
Right. Regular backyard. Not a very big backyard. But he had legit swales out there.
He had one big swale. Swale out there.
I think there was three of them, actually. Yeah. There was actually three of them back there. So he had swales in this very small backyard, little food forest out there out back. How cool is that? So, yes. Now, his were deep, but you don't necessarily have to have them that deep. Remember, a swale is a water harvesting ditch on contour, depending on what you want to do with it. But just look, y'all, please, please, please do your swale on the front end.
Yeah.
If you're going to have a swale, do it on the front end. Trust me. Okay, y'all, so that's going to do it for us today. We're going to be out there. Remember, be there or be square. We're going to have that swale workshop linked down below. Hopefully that article that I talked about as well. Hopefully we see a lot of y'all at this swale workshop this weekend. Till next time, y'all, remember, stay alert, stay alive.